episode number 464. My name is John Morgan, and Cole Coffee is with me, or I should probably say more appropriately, I am with Cole Coffee in his luxurious penthouse suite here at near the Host Hotel.
Yes, Anacio.
In Anaheim, California. Wow, what was that?
That was Korean for hello.
Oh, look at you. All the Korean rom-coms paying off, all the recommendations that you're getting on what to watch.
Yes, yes. You know, I'm just a man of the world. And being here in California, which along the lines of like San Diego and everything, there's lots of Asians around this.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's all kinds of places. So I'm feeling my peoples.
I love it. It's that one quarter is just emerging through,
it's
pressing all the way.
Shining bright. It's shining brightly.
I love it. Well, I appreciate you having me out here. Kind of a unique situation. Obviously, I just flew in today. You actually flew in today as well.
Yep.
But you are staying for the full week. I am actually going to leave from here and head back to Las Vegas tonight.
You had enough of MMA. You're like, that was enough. That's enough.
Yeah,
I'm done.
I just dipped my toes in the pool of MMA, and I'm like,
I hear there's some free food over at this one shindig. I'm going to go into there, and then I'll go to this presser, whatever this is.
I was really there for the what was it called?
OMCVE.
I gotta find it again. OC Vibe.
OC Vibe. Yeah.
I will give them a shout out real quick. We're gonna talk about UFC 298, of course, and this press conference. And we decided to wait an extra day because you and I were both kind of busy yesterday with different plans, and thought it would make sense since we were both gonna be in Anaheim, California, to wait a day. Although it's probably worth pointing out, this was the original release date of the MMA Roadshow back in the day before official weigh-ins were a thing, and we didn't have to wake up at 7 a.m. in the morning.
Because we remember the very first one was Fridays. We were doing like Fridays, and then I think we shifted to Thursdays, and then we went to Wednesdays, and then
Tuesdays coming up next year.
Yeah, I feel like we've done some early Tuesdays somewhere along the lines.
We've had to squeeze one in, maybe Mondays from now on. Of course, Sundays could be a thing. We just every couple of years, we'll just move the date.
Like, we're just going to tell you what happens before everything happens in the fight week, and then just we'll see how we did the next following Monday.
We'll lay it. All right, real quick, because I do want to give a shout out. OC Vibe. We went to this thing that was right before the press conference that was over at the, what do they call that thing? The transportation hub, the Arctic.
Arctic
Transportation.
International. It's like the something international. Blah,
it's a
blah,
big
blah.
It's a big train station and bus hub, basically right next to the Honda Center. And it's been there a long time. I've seen that frame. I've never been inside of it before. I had no idea how nice it is in there. It's really, really nice in there. I don't know if that's new as well.
Yeah, certainly that looks like they maybe refurbished it. But it had like a retro feel, but like a polished retro feel.
Yeah, it was
too.
Nice. I mean, for a bus station, train station, it was nice. But anyway, so we went over there because they're rolling out this $4 billion project. And it's basically a reimagination of the area where the Honda Center is and where this transportation hub is. And I will say, I mean, look, it was a brief presentation. This thing is going to be years in the making. I think if you look at the timeline, it's the inauguration is this year. A parking structure is open next year. An urban park, a concert hall, and a market hall food complex open 2026. The South Plaza, a theater, a club open in 2027. An arena hotel, a meadow and wellness parks, a Catella pedestrian bridge, which is Catella Avenue, is that main road that actually ends up going all the way down by Disneyland as well. That opens in 2028. And then another hotel, residential units, and additional parking open in 2029. So this is not something that's going to happen overnight. But I'm telling you, man, if this vision comes to life, holy cow, this thing is going to be super, super cool. The whole area looks like a really cool thing. And I think what's even more important is Pete Dropick was there, UFC executive, longtime UFC executive, along with one of the guys in charge of this project. And he was mentioning that, of course, the UFC is here on Saturday night. Well, WWE is here on Monday in the same building at the Honda Center. And this is part of a multi-year commitment that the two TK organizations are making to the Honda Center to bring three events each over the next, I believe, 5 years. Now, there was some misreporting going on out there, and I think it was just a misreading of the press release and the way it was written, because I actually read the exact same thing when I read it the first time. I was like, holy cow, three events a year? My gosh, like one arena holding three events a year that's not in Vegas? That's insane. But it's when you go back and read it specifically, that is not the case. It's just going to be three each over time. So it's still a big deal, but not as big of a deal. But Pete Dropick was able to talk about the fact, and listen, TKO has mentioned it, and You know, they've said that this is part of what we're doing, part of the merger of these two brands, is we can market them together. And it makes all the sense in the world. But when Pete Dropick laid it out and he talked about this OC Vibe thing, I mean, good Lord, what he mentioned is so true. He's like, we envision, you know, scenarios like this. And he's like, this is a first of its kind type destination that's being built. But when you say first of its kind, I think that means you envision others being built in the future around the country, where he's like, imagine this, our fans can come in, you know, they can check into a hotel on Wednesday, they can park their car, they can go out to bars and restaurants on Thursday, they can go to the press conference on Friday, they can go to the weigh-ins on Saturday, they can go to the fights on Sunday, they can go to the after parties and hang out, and then on Monday they can go to the wrestling event, and all without ever leaving the complex, you know, just staying there and parked, yeah, and hitting up all, and you, man, when you put it like that, I'm like, dude, that's a hell of a vision for that, for this company.
Yeah, especially when he laid it like that, he's like, you can literally come park your car, don't have to worry about it, and you can literally be entertained the whole week. So it was very, very interesting and very, very exciting. The only thing I would think that could make it even better is that you run like have a train stop here that takes you off to like Vegas or something, or some cool little spot
so
like that.
Cool.
Then it would literally become a destination spot. But yeah, that one stop shop thing was very, very cool. I almost wanted to ask him what the inspiration, of maybe if there was another site that sort of gave them the inspiration, because the idea was great. But at that point, it was like, bro, we got
to
get over to
the
other thing.
So
we was just like, thank you very much. It was a nice spiel. Thank you for the food.
I just want to give it a shout.
It's very cool,
if
though.
This thing does come to fruition, like, yeah, they've got it mapped out. And again, you know,
especially tying into the Olympics and stuff, it's going to get a lot of exposure.
That's right. They said, and that made sense too. They wrapped up the presentation by I guess that Honda Center is going to host volleyball is that 2028?
2028.
Yeah, when it comes to LA, and they're going to host volleyball. So they want this to be like a key destination type area for, you know, when the Olympics are back in the United States and in Los Angeles. So I don't know. Normally I wouldn't talk a whole lot about a project. I mean, we do. We talked about the Sphere. We talked. Yeah. I've talked about, you know, the other projects that we've seen. I mean, this thing, I don't know. If you're in Anaheim or Southern California, it's several years away, so you don't have to get too excited. But this thing looks cool. And even I'll say just a little thing. I'll be honest. I've been down to this place a whole lot. Like, I've been to Affliction events down here. I mean, Ronda, Brock, like all these fights. I had no idea there was a river right here. There's the Santa Ana River runs right alongside this property. I had no idea. And they're like, you know, we're going to build that so that it's riverside. And it reminded me of what they did in my hometown of Dallas, where the Trinity River is, you know, as when I was growing up, it was just a drainage gulch, basically, is what people consider it to be. And then they start building these really nice bridges over it and making little parks and jogging trails. And now all of a sudden you've got desirable real estate where people want to live and people want to be by, because it, you know, it changed the whole landscape of everything. So I don't know. I mean,
it's cool. I mean, but
I don't want to shill too hard. It looks cool.
Right. And even if it's shilling or even if it's not, I mean, part of when we started this podcast, we talked about the travel. It was about showing these things in these cities that we're going to. And this is just another example of the UFC going to a place and us seeing something very, very cool. Yes, it is partnered up with the UFC and they're helping building it. But the fact of, like, it's kind of neat seeing this on the ground floor before it's really even getting started, because at some point, it seems in the near future, 3 or 4 years from now, this is going to be a mecca of entertainment over here.
Huge.
So it's going to be really, really cool. So take it as it is. But, I mean, you know, I feel like that's kind of in line with what this whole road show and travel is about, you know, finding cool spots that now people are going to be able to see a UFC event and, oh, hey, go across the street and have this whole entertainment venue. So
I
it's pretty
it.
Neat.
As
it's pretty neat.
Seems like it'd be fun.
Yeah, 100%.
All right. UFC 298 press conference is in the books. And I got to be honest with you, man, hats off to the fans in Anaheim. The energy in that place was crazy. And I mean, we'll get into the specifics of it along the way, but I'll just say off the top, that was one of the more fun press conferences I can remember in recent memory. I was entertained by it from start to finish.
So loud.
I thought the fighters were great, but yeah, the fans might have been the star. Peel back the curtain a little bit. I mean, I guess you had headphones in your ears and you were listening to the audio that you were recording, so you probably had a better idea of exactly what was going on. I'm going to be honest with you. When I go in just a few minutes and hop back on the plane to fly back to Vegas, I'm probably going to need to connect to the Wi-Fi and watch a replay of this event to know about.
Did you not really hear what they were saying up there?
I'm telling you, 80% of what was said, I had no idea.
Oh, that's
that
outrageous.
Crowd was
so then I guess I was lucky, because I could hear what they were saying. It got what was hard for me was when questioners were asking the next person, because the crowd was still loudly cheering,
right,
or talking about the other one. So I guess I was lucky, but yeah, it was good. But you know, you have to go back and listen to it.
And
yeah, I had no idea it was that bad.
And you know who deserves VIP, MVP? Yeah, I guess it'd be MVP, not VIP. MVP awards. gold stars, big bonuses. Bro, the translators, Sergey and Fabiano, you should have seen. They had to get up out of their seats because they couldn't hear where they were. They were moving around so that they could basically lip read the people that were asking questions because they couldn't hear anything either. And imagine barely being able to hear anything. Like, I can barely hear anything, but I'm like, whatever. I mean, I'll just ask my next question. It's fine. You know what I mean? They're trying to translate these things, and the energy in that building was off the charts, man. And so they deserve some high praise for their work tonight. But, man, does it not just get you excited? Well, never mind. I was going to say, does it not get you excited for what the energy is going to be like on Saturday night? But you found out tonight you're going to be in
a tent. Please tell them. Please tell them.
You found out tonight that for the first time, I believe, that I can recall in Honda Center history, the media center, at least for MMA events, UFC events, the media center is set up outside. I remember there was a big tent outside for the Fox debut.
Staples Center's had a big tent outside before. We've done that in L.A. when they did the Staples Center one time. We were outside in a tent.
Really?
But, yeah, this is the first time I remember it here. But it's funny because, you know, until we did the walkthrough to get to our seats, then I was like, oh, okay, now I kind of remember, you know, because everything is honestly the same.
They don't have a big
it's like a little throw-together whatever space. But we saw the tent put up, and it was just like, okay, well, I guess that makes sense.
So here's the thing with the tent, because obviously we use a tent at T-Mobile as well. Practically speaking, it is much better, right? Because, as you said, a lot of the times these arenas aren't designed with a massive press conference room in it, because for the most part, you're usually just hosting like a team, right, that probably has a small amount of media, traveling media. You know, you got your beat reporters and that sort of thing. I mean, I don't know. I didn't ask how many is credentialed, but, you know, 100 media credentialed? I don't know, something along those lines. The pay-per-views get big, especially when you're talking about international stars, right, because they bring in the international media. Now you don't just have the local media. Now you don't just have the normal MMA guys. Now you got international people making the trip as well. So they got a lot of that. So they're moving it outside. But we say all that to say that, yes, unfortunately, it is funny because, you know, people, when they find out you go cover an event, they'll be like, dude, that had to be sick. Like, what was the energy like inside the building? And poor Cold Coffee was like, oh, from the tent?
Can't wait to feel the building shaking. And, oh, do you hear everybody stomping? Can you hear that? No, we really can't. Oh, can you hear the roar of the crowd? Oh, is that the sounds of beer bottles breaking and this? No, I don't know. I can't tell. I'm outside. All I hear is the wind rustling outside.
I heard the same audio you heard because it was playing on the monitor
on the
inside
TV
that I was watching.
So everybody's like, isn't it so great to go and you just feel the atmosphere? I'm like, oh, yeah, the atmosphere of the tent that I'll be in or the atmosphere of the basement that I'll be in. Oh, yeah, it's going to be electric, folks.
It's off the
electric
charts.
I'm going to have my own very own porta potty outside that I could go to.
I mean, but they're upgraded porta potties, so they're usually they're the.
Why did you see it?
No, I didn't. I'm just guessing.
That well, we don't know. We don't
usually
know.
Usually they have the porta potty trailers, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
that are nice at the beginning of the night, and then by the end of the night,
just the porta potty.
There's no paper towels. You know, I don't ever take a dump on those things, but I assume by the end of the night, the toilet paper's gone as well.
No road
you know?
Games.
Yeah, no. So it is what it is.
Not complaining, but it is funny.
I was very, very surprised when we got there for that for the presser today. Just how many people were already lined up. The hundreds and hundreds of people. They showed up, and then as the presser went on, it just reiterated the fact that this town was just dying for MMA, and I can't remember. And even though I had headphones in, so I was able to hear the audio better, it was still so loud that the sound of the crowd was going through my ears still. I was trying to cup over my ears with the earbuds in just so I could try to hear because it was still that loud. So kudos to the crowd, man. This crowd was killing it, man. It was killing it. And the fighters were reciprocating. I mean, they were enjoying it. You know, they're having a good time as well. The stuff that they could understand and probably hear, you know.
What little they could. I think that was one of – I mean, I always hate to say that was one of the best all time because it's hard to remember everything. You know what I mean? We're talking about, you know, 15, 20 years worth of coverage, and it's hard to remember. But to me, that was what fight promotion is supposed to be. You know, the crowd was there. The high energy was there. Yes, the back and forth were there. The trash talk was there. But, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about it, and I've always mentioned I don't like race, religion, family being brought up. And I know that Dana always says, hey, it's the fight business, and people say nasty things. But to me, I do believe there are limits. And, you know, I'm not trying to be a pearl-clutching member of the media here saying there's limits. But it's just my own personal taste and what I like and don't like. I'm not saying, you know, fighters should be barred from speaking about it. I'm just saying what I find tasteful and entertaining. And I just thought everything up there on the stage today was fun. It was, you know, obviously, you know, some words were thrown back and forth.
Yeah, 100%.
But it wasn't, to me, it wasn't where that it starts to get a little dark. You know what I mean? It starts to go too far for me. It's just, you know, I'm going to kick your ass. No, I'm going to kick your ass, but done so in creative fashion. So I enjoyed it. And I think you have to give, you know, we already gave out a couple MVP awards to Sergey and Fabiano, but you got to give out an MVP award to Alexander Volkanovski, right? I mean, loved. Absolutely loved that skit that was put together by the Australian betting company. I thought Volkanovski performed well in it. I thought the writing on it was hilarious. The jokes were funny. I mean, I just thought it was a fun piece of content. And then for him today to show up to the press conference in the old man Volk outfit and having fun with it, and then, you know, reenacting some of it in walking out funny, like he's limping a little bit, and then, you know, at one point mimicking that he is falling asleep on the stage. And then how about Paulo Costa walking up to the other side and shaking him and waking him up and being like, hey, man, we got to, you know, you got a press conference going. And it was funny to see the security guard's reaction, because obviously security's there to make sure nobody touches each other.
Yeah.
And Paulo gets up and starts walking to the other side, and they kind of freak out a little bit. But then Paulo just kind of is like, hey, old man Volk, you got to wake up. We got a press conference. I just thought that was hilarious. And I thought Volkanovski was great today. And
Marab was good. I was just actually just cutting a clip while we're doing it when
Mexican Marab brought out the flag. Really? That was great as well. Right?
He's killing it. He's continuing his streak of killing the game right now, you know, for sure.
We've always been Marab fans. I mean, I think you and I have been singing his praises on here for a long time. Yeah. And not just his skills, but his personality. And it's so cool to see that his personality is really shining through. He's doing the same thing, right, where it's a lot of fun little pre-fight video content skits and stuff like that that are just, you know, good nature, some making fun of himself, some making fun of other people, but all in good nature. And then today, embracing the fact that he's in Southern California, obviously a big Latino population. You mentioned the Asian population. I mean, look, when you're in Southern California, every population is represented here, man. You've got every nationality on earth, but a huge Latino population, a huge Mexican population. And he busts out the Mexican flag and says, you know, he's going to make Mexico great again and represent. You know, obviously, Henry Cejudo always has represented Mexico as well as the American flag. So, yeah, Marab crushed it as well.
Yeah, that was pretty spectacular. I can't think of – I mean, you kind of feel bad because Kopolov only got the one question. So those guys, you really didn't feel them. But for the most part, everybody up there had something good, something to kind of take away. I thought the face-offs were good. I mean, all in all, man, it was a very positive, very cool – press conference. I think we do a lot of these that sometimes it just kind of feels stagnant. Mm-hmm. This one, and you said it earlier, there wasn't a lot of bad shit talk. There wasn't anybody really saying anything that we're going to be cringing about later on. And it was just good, high energy. Like, shit talk was taking place, but it was just like nothing over the top. And it was just like, hell yeah. I kind of left feeling jazzed up. Yeah. And half it was from the crowd's interaction.
Yeah.
Because then it made me feel like, oh man, I can't wait to be out there in that tent listening to them go crazy. I'm just going to be, like, shaking, like, oh, man, like, can you feel that?
Guys, do you realize that just outside of this tent and then inside that building and across the concourse and down the arena stairs, all that is happening?
All that is happening. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. That could be because I'm getting ready to be cold sitting outside. You never know.
Boy, it might get chilly.
I like it like that.
A lot of great stuff. I want to ask you one thing, what you thought about this, because, you know, if there's some criticism, I guess, well, Ilya Topuria has put the center of attention on him, and look, it's not like he hasn't asked for it. He's been wanting it for a long time. He has got it. What he does with it now is, you know, up to him, right? And, of course, up to Alexander Volkanovski as well. A tall mountain to climb, but if he can win it, I mean, beating a pound-for-pound great, remaining undefeated, becoming champion, unbelievable. But he's gotten his criticism along the way, right, for being a little too much like Conor McGregor. And then today, you know, he snatches the belt off the stage, obviously eerily reminiscent of Conor McGregor and Jose Aldo. Now, at the moment he did it, it was a moment when Alexander Volkanovski was saying, you know, when you, to get the belt, you know, you can't just take it. You got to work for it, because the question was about Topuria taking pictures with the belt. Now, it should be said that the UFC makes the fighters take pictures with the belt. They need to have that artwork ready to go should they need it if they are in a championship fight. So it's not as like, well, you know, I just ask, can you please take shots of me with the belt? But that said, that was the question that was being asked, and Volkanovski was saying, hey, you know, I hope he you know, enjoyed his time with it, because you know, you don't just get it, you got to work for it, and et cetera, et cetera. And at that moment, that's when Topuria took it. Now, I've seen a lot of people in the instant reaction online, people saying immediately, oh my God, this Conor McGregor wannabe. I mean, he's just pulling out Conor's greatest hits over and over, and so the hate around him becomes even higher. So I don't know. I guess my question to you is, do you think that by any chance that was a misstep on his part, or do you think – I don't think it was pre-planned. Like, I understand there's no – look, Conor McGregor has influenced the sport tremendously. You know what I mean? There's no question everybody has seen Conor and takes a little bit of his showmanship and what he does. I don't think that Ilya is sitting there just, you know, looking over Conor McGregor tape and looking for lines that he can get. So I don't know. I didn't feel like that was a pre-planned moment. I felt like he was reacting to Volkanovski's answer, but do you think that perhaps that was a misstep? And I feel like it soured a lot of people, or maybe they were just looking for reasons to hate.
I think people were probably looking to hate just for reasons to hate. I mean, it started right from the get-go. They were sort of booing when he walked in the room, you know. But it's funny you brought up Conor, and it made me think of when Eddie Alvarez sort of lost his mind a little bit.
Yes.
Like, he kind of brought him out of himself.
We were praising him and all the build-up, how he kept his composure.
And then he lost his shit, you know. Yep. I definitely don't feel like it crossed that line. I definitely feel like Ilya didn't do anything where he was so out of character. I mean, he grabbed at the belt, but, you know, honestly, I didn't feel like it was something, like, crazy. Because didn't Eddie grab, like, a chair and he was, like, gonna – it was like, all right, bro, like, this is getting nuts. I mean, I didn't feel like it was anything crazy that we haven't seen in boxing or that we haven't even seen in the UFC before, but I didn't feel it was anything to the point where I'm worried about Ilya's doing something out of character. I think he was just amped up and wanted to just kind of steal the spotlight a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be – I don't think it certainly didn't make the crowd at some point be like, oh, I like this guy, but now I don't like him. I think the people there were already ready to boo for him, and I think at that point – he just sort of embraced it and just wanted to be the heel.
Let me just keep being
same
the
thing
heel.
Like when Ian Gary left the stage, or I'm sorry, Ian Machado Gary, he's married, he took his wife's name, Ian Machado Gary, when he left the stage, he just flipped him off and was like, bring
that?
It on.
How about that?
So he played, he did it as well. He just played to the crowd. He was like, F you guys, you're going to give it to me.
And he
said nothing wrong on it. Like, no, he's like, I don't know why you guys are like giving him the hate or whatever. But like, he literally came in, people were shitting on him, booing on him. And then he just fully embraced it.
At one point, he's like, but you're all talking about me.
And he's absolutely right, you know. So I love that. He was just at the end, was just like, I even followed him with the camera, and he just kind of did the whole hand to his ear, cup, and like, bring it on, just chatting. And I loved it, you know. So, I mean, that's another instance where a guy that just sort of took that moment, just played with the crowd, played a little bit of the heel thing, and it just egged it on. And I'm sure he loved it, you know, because he's gonna go back to his room. He's gonna go back with his wife and his family. He's just gonna just be extra focused at the job at hand. I mean, I love it, you know. This presser was so I really definitely felt energized after, because I thought everybody handled
it.
I thought everybody handled it well, but it's hard to. Like, I got to give all credit to the crowd, because I think the fighters just played with what the crowd, but I think the crowd is what made it for me.
How about the chance of secret juice for Paulo Costa?
I was like, where
secret
are
juice.
We at?
Secret
like,
juice.
I was so he surprised just... at that. I was like, bro, are we in, like, Brazil? I was like, this is crazy. Like, they were finding all these fun little, like, side story bits that, you know, fans that are diehards would know and understand. Like, anywhere else, if somebody didn't know, like, Costa's, like, funny little bit, they'd be like, what the hell are they yelling? Like, I don't get it. But everybody's in on the story here. Everybody's in on the joke, you know. So it was really cool to see that. It just really shot up, like, the star power. I mean, like, obviously everybody loves Whitaker. But, man, it'd be hard to think that the crowd wasn't 50-50, you know, on that particular fight. When just in terms of how the crowd was – you know, cheering for him. They certainly weren't, like, they weren't yelling the Predator or whatever. What's Whitaker's?
The Reaper?
Reaper.
The Reaper.
I don't know why I thought it was
Predator.
Predator.
I mean,
for a
Francis
second.
Ngannou, I'm like, why would they put you in that? But I was like, okay, I'll go with that. I didn't know where. I don't know what you're in. Maybe I missed something here. But dude, and listen.
Well, Francis is gone, so now you know it's been. You know now, Robert, feel free, Bobby Knuckles, to take Predator.
The Predator, Robert, the Predator.
Because in terms of like surveillance UAV vehicles that the military has, the Reaper is okay, but the Predator is the step up. There
Look
actually
at
are
you
drones.
Breaking out knowledge.
I'm just saying.
Look at that. Just military saying. Knowledge. I will say, too, Paulo Costa, how about him playing to the crowd as well? By just like before he answered his first question, just saying how great the crowd was, how amazing it was. And, oh, look, how about John Anik kind of sidestepping a question as well and playing to the crowd? Well, I won't say he sidestepped the question, but obviously his comments that I thought were unnecessarily controversial, I guess, or unnecessarily discussed in you know, talking about his frustration sometimes with the online interactions that he sees. Listen, we all know about online hate and online bullshit, but he was brought up today, and instead of really, really addressing it, he was just like, how about, I've never been in front of a crowd like this, and everybody goes crazy. He's like, done, question answered, don't have to answer anymore. Yeah. So I thought that was great.
I had to double check. I was wrong. I had it backwards. The Reaper is the more dangerous version than the Predator, but they are both drones.
There was somebody in the military that was just going crazy right there. They're like,
he literally
no
was pinging my phone.
About.
I was like, guys, I'm sorry. I'm on. It was the Secretary of Defense. He pings me all the time. I was like, bro, all right, let me just clear this up real quick.
Oh man.
Yeah, you know.
All right, so listen, let me, because I haven't talked to you. I've talked a lot about this, and I look. What's your take on the main event? Because. Look,
I love it.
Look, it's great moment. Okay, and your thoughts on the co-main event? Great as well.
Love it.
Okay, yeah, no. Look, here's the thing: is Alexander Volkanovski. I don't know how you pick against him. It was funny. I actually ran into Giga Chikadze. He came up and was talking to Giga Chikadze right before we walked in to the press conference, and he was like, hey, "What do you think about the fight?" And it's just we both kind of agree. Like, how do you pick against Alexander Volkanovski? It's tough, right? I mean, he's the GOAT featherweight. If not the GOAT, then you know certainly. I mean, at worst, top three in featherweights all time. But he's beat the other two that would be in that conversation. So I don't know how he's not number one. But the big thing does come out, right? I mean, he is coming off that knockout. It's less than 4 months ago. But it, you know, you've got this undefeated Ilia Topuria, but. Undefeated against, you know, he hasn't really taken out the ranked contenders. He hasn't been battle tested. He hasn't been through this. He hasn't been in these moments. So as I sit here, man, I'll be honest with you. I'm 50-50 on this damn thing. I'm 50-50 because I feel like if we know everybody's 100%, you just don't pick against Alexander Volkanovski at 145 pounds. I don't see how you do it. But I don't know that he is 100%. I don't know that the brain and everything is fully recovered after less than 4 months of a knockout. And we know that, you know, with these knockouts, the thing that you need more than anything is time and just the ability to let it heal and to let everything rest. And Topuria, I think does have the ability to touch him. I think he's got speed. He's got power. He's got youth and athleticism. He's got all that on his side. So I feel like Alexander Volkanovski overall is the better fighter. He's certainly got the greater track record. He's certainly got the greater resume. But Topuria, you know, given the skills that he has, given the confidence that he has, and given the knockout that Volkanovski had, maybe the timing is just right for an upset. So as you sit here tonight, I'm imagining your pick is already in. But
is it a
one of confidence, or is this a roll of the dice? And which one are you thinking?
I wouldn't call it a roll of dice. I'm confident in the fact that I think Volk steps up when he needs to. So I did lean towards Volkanovski. I did go back and forth a little bit because I believe very much in the fact that Topuria has everything to make a championship run and to actually take the belt. I think he has everything to be a champion. I just think Volk is still there, you know? I mean, while there is the knockout and while that hasn't been that long, I mean, Volk's a guy, I mean, even back when you take his rugby days and stuff like that, you know, big shots and stuff like that, it wasn't the kind of thing to kind of set him back. I think we do put a lot into that of what, you know, fighters and how much time they should take off, but that's also, you know, maybe somebody that's not at a super high level like these guys. And I mean, it's not like we see it happen all the time to him either. And I imagine he's probably
it's not
pretty
a frequent
smart.
Thing.
Yeah, it's not like we're seeing him get knocked out all the time, you know, and then we're like, oh no, we can't see this again. I think he does the right things in training. I don't think he's taking crazy heavy damage in training. So I'm thinking he's probably able to shake it off. And I think the way he is, I mean, I just kind of like when it was like Nunes, like me, until I see something that really convinces me that I need to start picking against him. Obviously the Makhachev was a different fluke thing because he was kind of going outside of his normal thing to do something else. And even then, I was swayed by that first performance that I can't remember if I picked Makhachev on that or if I was like, all right, Volk, you got this. And then we saw him get starched and we're right. Like, whoa, that was weird. I'm just confident that he's going to do what we know him to do. Just like with Nunes, when we knew that Nunes, we saw her on one side of the versus line, you're like, okay, Amanda's going to take it. I still think that while Topuria is dangerous and he has all the capabilities of knocking out a lot of people, I just think Volk is not going to give him – he's not going to stand in front and say, all right, let's make this a kickboxing, let's make this a boxing match. He's going to do what he needs to do to get his hands on him and keep him guessing, I would assume. That being said, if Topuria stings him and slows him down a little bit, he has all the speed and all the skills to swarm him and just put a bad finish on it. I mean, it's what he does to anybody, but Volk is tough, man.
Yeah.
So I lean towards Volk on this one.
I like it. If I was still making a staff pick, I would lean towards Volkanovski as
well.
It's
hard to not do it, you know?
You have to. I do see Topuria's path to victory, and the knockout does scare me, but I agree with everything you said, so I'm leaning there.
I wouldn't be surprised, though.
Exactly.
I wouldn't be surprised. If he goes out there and does what we think and what we know he's capable, and he beats Volkanovski, I don't think anybody's going to be like, oh, man, I didn't see that
right.
coming.
You can't,
I
mean, it's like, not like he has no business.
You look at his body
here.
Of work. I mean, the guy's got it. He's got it. And, I mean, he wouldn't be in this position. This is not a guy that shit-talked his way into a fight. This is a guy that's earned it.
Yep.
And he's there for a reason, and he has every possibility of taking that and taking that one. I think just like any other one, whoever's going to make the mistake first is probably going to lose the fight. Whoever makes a bigger mistake and can't recover from it is going to lose. Whoever gets caught, both the guys are tough. I mean, I think both of them have the power to finish each other, but they also have good chins as well. I mean, like, both these guys, I think, can eat some shot, and they've taken some damage. We've seen plenty of fights when Topuria's ended at the end of the fight, and he's banged up and he's beaten. And it could look the same way as this, but, you know, he's banged up and he's beaten and he still wins. So it's going to be tough, man. It's going to be a good fight. I think it's going to be good. I mean, if people are not happy about this main event, I mean, you're just silly.
I didn't even need today to be incredibly hyped about this main event, but it just made me even more hyped. I did want to say one thing about Volkanovski as well. Volkanovski had the best – so when Connor did snatch Aldo's belt, obviously Aldo didn't speak English at press conferences.
Yeah.
And he speaks a little English, but he would never speak it at press conferences. It infuriated him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it absolutely infuriated him. Volkanovski, Ilya isn't under his skin the way Connor was already under Aldo's skin, right? But on top of that, because he had the ability to respond in English and go back, his line was amazing where he's just like, enjoy it now because you're never going to touch it again, dude. So go ahead. You know what I mean? It's just like, take my belt if you want. Like, you never touch it again, so you might as well have it now.
And I think he realizes, too, it's at that point, it's just a prop. It's not actually their belt. It's like they show up, and it's just the PR brings a belt. So I think he's able to keep himself separate, whereas Aldo's like, you know, I from where I've came from, this means something. And who knows if where – I can't remember where that actually happened, but I guarantee that was just a PR belt, too.
Right.
But I think it's just like, I'm in front of my people – and you're going to try to take something like that, that this is what makes Brazilians love winners and they love champions. So, like, that was like the ultimate, like, no-no over there. And he was acting according like what any Brazilian over there would do. Volk here realized that, I get it. We're just here promoting this thing. That's not even my
belt. Like,
so you want to grab it, bro.
That prop, my man.
Like, you're not going to get me out of my head.
You can
like,
get one from UFCstore.com if you want. You know what I mean?
So it's you know, it. Yeah, definitely I can see the differences. But, yeah, I forgot about
that. I kind of like that. I kind of liked his reaction so much better.
Yeah.
Aldo got so mad where you were like, damn, dude. Like, he just
got emotional.
To you bad.
He got to him.
He got to you bad. Whereas, like, Volkanovski, just like, yeah, man,
go ahead. Laughed it off, and that was the better. That's the best way to do
it. I thought.
That just shows you where his head's at. Yep. You know, like, he's not emotional. He's not overreacting to anything. He's having a great time. Even the whole character that he was playing, the lines he was using was just – perfectly Amazing. Well done. He was like, I could shit talk as an old man to you. Like, I mean, it was incredible.
That was amazing. I loved it. I just absolutely loved everything about it. Volkanovski, if he wasn't already one of your favorite fighters, I don't see how he wasn't.
Yeah.
Poke fun at yourself. Have a little enjoyment out of it. Was great.
I could see SportsCenter taking some of that crap if they had, having a fun, lighthearted moment. I could see them literally doing a bit of him sleeping up there and having Costa come over there and wake him up. I just cut that for our social media. Like, that was hilarious. I luckily had to be – I noticed that Volk was, like, snoozing. So I zoomed in early on to Volk. Yeah. I'll show you after we get done. I zoomed in early and then pulled out as I started to notice that Costa was standing up. So I got a great shot of the whole fucking thing. So
great.
It's pretty cool.
It was so funny because obviously he's playing, but instantly reminded me of Robbie Lawler falling asleep at a press conference. Obviously, yeah. Derek Lewis falling asleep at post-fighter, at least laying down. I remember that shot.
But this was
funny
just perfect because he's the old man.
He's just the old man.
It was perfect.
It was beautiful.
It was perfect.
All right, listen. Unfortunately, I can't stay for a long time. I've got a plane to catch. I thought the press conference might be about an hour earlier than it was, so we were a little tighter on time than I wanted to be. But I'm still so happy, even if perhaps this is a touch abbreviated, that we got to talk about this here in Anaheim. I will be back on Saturday. One thing I did want to address real quick with Ian Garry. Listen, I know that the way Ian Garry carries himself and the way he speaks is never going to do him any favors. Even before people started getting involved in his personal life and his wife and his family and all that, however you feel about any of that stuff, even before that stuff started coming up, just the way he carried himself and the way he spoke, you knew he was always going to be a little bit of a hated guy and tough to get over. But one thing I was watching the Media Day interviews yesterday, I think a lot of people kind of took out of context and got mad. Well, I won't say took out of context, but he said, they talked about the idea of going back to Ireland and him headlining there. And he's like, maybe I'm too big at that point that I can't go back to Ireland.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. And I was surprised by that.
A lot of people got pissed off. But I just want to remind everybody, that arena, that three arena is not big, right? I think the maximum seating, like
– But it's
like,
crazy it's loud like, when, oh, it's when they crazy get in there. It's absolutely nuts.
That Conor Brandao fight that I was there for. That was amazing.
There with you. Remember we got to take it off.
We
saw that as spectators.
It was amazing. I paid for my way to go over there at that time because I'll never forget Matt Erickson, his mom lived in London at the time. And so, he was like, well, I want to go visit my mom, so can I take that event? And it's like, well, you can't really say no to that. Like, yeah, go see your mom. But I was like, dude, I'm not going to miss seeing Conor in this environment. It's amazing. So seeing Ian in that environment would be amazing. But I just remember after Conor did that, and that was early in the Conor run.
Yeah.
He never came back. You know what I mean? And it was, and it's not because – and I know it's comparing anybody to Conor is ridiculous because it's a different level. But the UFC, let's say even if – Ian Garry is not a champion. Let's say he's fighting for a title.
Yeah.
The UFC is not going to bring a title into a 9,000-seat venue. They're just not going to.
Yeah.
They're not going to do it. And I think that's all he meant by that. So I'm not trying to be Ian Garry defender here right now, but sometimes when stuff gets taken a little out of context or at least it's not given the full context of what he meant or somebody assumed. Because I think a lot of people were just assuming like, well, I'm just far too big for the country of Ireland. Yeah. It's a small little country.
Well, and plus, too, I think a lot of times when people become champion, they just assume that they are going to headline something back home. I think he was probably, reiterating the fact that I could be an international star. You could take me and put me on the headline anywhere, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to just be back in Ireland. That's how I sort of took it, that he was like, it doesn't need to
be in
my hometown.
They need me in Vegas. They need me in Madison Square Garden. They need
me.
Right.
Exactly. So,
I think there is some of that, right? Yeah. Like, hey, a pay-per-view is not happening in that arena, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, if I'm a pay-per-view star, maybe I'm too big to be there. But I don't know. Again, I'm not saying – people may still want to poop all over what he said. I get it. But I just want to remind everybody, because he didn't say – it's not like he took the time to be like, well, listen, I'd love to, but let's not forget, the three arena only has 9,500 seats. The UFC typically likes to operate for pay-per-view events, especially with title fights, in venues of 17,000 or more. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I think a lot of people didn't get the proper context. Say what you will about Ian Garry, but I just thought that was one where people were like, look at this guy. It's like, well, what he's saying kind of does make some sense.
I'm going to get some shit for safe because I picked Garry in that one. I homer for Fortis all the time.
Of course.
This one, I don't know. And there's part of me that's like, oh, okay, maybe this is what I'm going to do. And then Safe will be like, haha, see, you were wrong. I'm like, I'll be more than happy to be like, you're right, brother. I was wrong. I picked Garry and I was wrong, and Jeff starched him. But man, as much as people like to hate on this kid, man, he thrives in it. And boy, what he did to Neil Magny, I was
amazing.
Just like, okay.
He looks like
I can't doubt the kid.
He looks
can't
like
doubt
a real
him
deal.
Anymore.
I agree. I would actually lean that way as well. How about Duval Chili Cejudo? Which way did you lean there?
Marab.
I do too. I like Marab
I
in that
Marab.
One. I like Marab in that one. No disrespect to Triple C.
Nope.
Triple C is amazing.
And he could win easily. I mean, it's hard to doubt Marab right now. I mean, he's just been more active. He's firing at a high level, and I think he just really, really wants it. He sees the potential to get to the title, and I mean, Henry's the stepping stone to get that title shot.
Yep.
I think Marab
wins. I think Cejudo's great. Still, yep. I still don't believe the breakup, so to speak.
It was
Eric
a work.
Iverson.
It was such a work.
It was, dude. Those two guys are pro wrestling to their core.
Yeah,
like they are, and I know there.
Everybody's
were,
like, oh, but Eric
said it,
it
wasn't
like,
real.
Bro.
Like, of course you don't. You don't break kayfabe, right?
Eric's just weird. He wanted to have a reason to probably get on the show, you know? Like
Eric, dude.
You know?
Hey, Eric's greatest accomplishment is getting Betch Gohea a title shot, man. He got her. Pro wrestling.
He is all about
it. She had no idea what she was doing, and he made her do the four for the four horsewomen so he could earn his way, or she could earn her way to Ronda Rousey, right? She had no idea what she was doing. He is as pro wrestling as it gets.
Yep.
And so I just, to me, that was always it was always a work.
Yeah, and it's funny because even in our spinning backlit, they're like, "Oh no, no!" And I was like, "Bro, these guys love wrestling." And I was like, "I'd be really surprised if it wasn't." And they're like, "See, it's the real thing." And then later on that day, what's that stupid meme? It's like 10 seconds later. You know, and I was like, yep. And after we put the fucking story out, look what happened. And it's like, all right, now we have to do an updated story.
Even Cejudo is like, and he is the king of cringe, right?
Yeah.
But like, even he knows if I'm firing my coach, I'm not going to do it in front of the countdown people.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they caught a moment of heat and they put it on the episode. Like, he sat down and welcomed it. You know what I mean? Like, bro.
I think – even if the people were like, oh, but it looks so awkward. I was like, yeah, because they're not actors.
They're not
like,
actors.
I mean, like, Eric, I guarantee, knew it was coming, but he was just like, okay, how do I play off this awkward? Because he probably knew it was coming at some point while they were filming, and then just – it wasn't like he was like, hey, guys, all right, now I'm going to walk in and do it, you know?
Yeah.
He was like – he just caught him off guard. And so Eric was like, oh, okay, this is the moment. And he's like, all I ever wanted was you to be a champion, Harry.
I love Captain Eric. He's better at conceptualization than he is at acting and
execution. But that's what I think why I love how Volk carried that shit, because we look at these athletes because they are stars of their own right, and we expect them to be able to do everything. So we think like, oh, hey, yeah, you need to act, you need to do this, and we just expect it to happen, and it's going to come off rough, it's going to come off weird. But yeah, that was a total effing work, as no matter what anybody says. Like, bro, these dudes are so thick and thin. Like, if it was a real breakup, Eric would be crushed. He would literally probably cry and leave the room.
100%.
Like, he's not going to sit there and be like, oh,
well,
okay.
The goal was always to make
the
you
goal
the best.
Is I'm like, bro, no, he would be crushed. He would literally probably walk out immediately and be like, I can't do this on camera.
You're 100%. You know what? That's probably the best point of all.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. I don't think people realize. I mean, they go back years.
I don't mean to joke about it, but I was literally like, dude, you would have to do like a wellness check on him. If that really happened and he left that room, I would be like, bro, somebody needs to go do a wellness check.
You're not wrong.
Because this guy is so entrenched with Henry and that team that he would be.
You're not wrong.
You know, I mean, it would be rough. It would be weird.
No, I know. That's not a joke.
That's not a joke. It's serious.
Yeah. No, that would destroy
that's
him.
That's how tight these dudes are. And if anybody's been around the scene, they understand that that's real. Like, it's.
Good point. That's the best explanation of all.
Yeah.
That's better than I said it 100%.
Yeah.
You're spot on. So, all right, listen, I got to run. Cutting it close on time.
I know you were. I was like,
apologize.
Wow,
I know.
Bro, you got to go.
I'm excited. I want to talk about this stuff. I hate the fact that
you
I got to go.
You bored in like 30 minutes.
Not even that. Less than that. 20 minutes. I got to go. All right, I'm bored in 20 minutes. I'm in a hotel. I haven't even ordered the Uber yet. How about that? But I have no carry-on or just carry-on.
And you're fourth group.
And I'm in group four. I gotta go. Watch
your
Danny Barlow, CFFC bet, make it undefeated like CFF. Danny Barlow, he's on the prelims. He's very, very exciting. All right, I'll be back on Saturday. I will watch the fights. We'll have a and a half. maybe we'll get some quotes from Cold Coffee during that. We'll see.
I might still be out in the tent.
Might still be out in the tent, but we'll get that. All right, I got to order this Uber. I got to go. Appreciate everybody for listening to us all. Appreciate everybody supporting us at Patreon.com/NMAroadshow. I can't remember it all because I'm worried I'm going to lose my flight and I won't get home. But most importantly of all, of course, I'm leaving. Thanks for listening.